Of the Hornets, don't.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the someplace they play so far.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Nothing they can play against. It makes us ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO with the team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline. End zone.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to the Alabama Football Podcast, powered by Bama Hammer. Tom, it looks like Alabama arrived in Knoxville ready to start the game. Finish? Eh, not so much.
Yeah, man. Saban seemed to be somewhat calm in his post-game press conference and, you know, gave both teams credit for a big rivalry. But I was pretty excited at the start and definitely, as our buddy Joe would say, there's plenty of things to coach up for the bye week.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we start out and we put 27 on them. It's almost the fallacy of expectation because, you know, I think Vegas called it a 14-point game. I think they nailed it. You and I, and I meant to go back and listen to our predictions last week and just didn't get back to it. But, our predictions weren't too far off from this type of – I think we probably had a little more for us and a little less for them, but I think we were in the neighborhood. But this game was almost the tale of two games, one blowout and one sort of nail-biter. You kind of average those together, and that's how you get 34-20. You know, based on our expectations going in, we probably would have been okay with that score. Based on our expectations going into the second quarter, a little frustrating.
It was, and we'll flip the field of defense here in a minute, but I was just really disappointed at how we handled, letting them back in the game with their running quarterback. You know, he's a guy that got his first playing time against us last year. He hasn't played all year, and he comes into the game, and he gives a different dynamic, but he's not the first running quarterback we've played, and they didn't do a pure zone read. I was really disappointed at how they were able to put some points on the board.
Let's come back to that when we talk defense, because I have, you know, probably not an answer, but maybe a little bit of a theory. But let's start with offense. What did you see? Alabama started pretty hot on offense. First play from scrimmage, 80-yard touchdown. That's pretty exciting. Certainly a tone setter of sorts there. You know, just a couple catches in. Amari is up to 155, couple of touchdowns. Ends up setting or breaking Julio's record for most yards in a game. And he's on the cusp of and we kind of predicted this back in the preseason guide that if he Amari has a big season, he can rewrite every record that we keep. And, man, he's just on the cusp of doing that. I think, after the bye week against LSU, he's gonna put his name at the top of a couple ledgers. What jumped out to you?
I did not realize Christian Jones was not going to play. Obviously, it was a pregame warm-up. They said he pulled a hammy. And so, watching it on TV, I was surprised to see him over there, you know, dressed out and, you know, didn't realize he wasn't going to play until they announced it. And so, you know, we've been calling in our last podcast for let's get Christian Jones involved in the offense. And so he doesn't have to take as many chances on special teams. And we said we'd love to see that play where you drag him behind the offensive line. So I thought it was kind of ironic that, you know, was that play called for him and he got hurt, or was that play called for Amari? Because Amari says after the game that, you know, he knew that play was getting called, and that's a play that we've seen Christian Jones be very effective at. So I loved the play call. I'm just wondering who it was truly meant for.
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. I mean, we did run the end around with Amari, you know, again, very frustrating. And I'll tell you this, and as I was watching it, I was just kind of dumbfounded. We lined up Amari in on the play before we ran the end around with Amari and lost yards. We lined him up at the tailback position in a power eye behind Justin Fowler. And the concept there is all eyes are on Amari. What's he going to do lined up at the running back position, at the tailback position? And what do? We give it on a fullback dive for a very key first down opportunity. We give it to Justin. And so we just ran a play where the concept is everybody's watching Amari. Let's use him as a decoy. What do we do on the very next play? We run in and around Amari, like we're with Amari, like we're gonna, like suddenly on the very next play, no one's going to be watching him. That was, to me, just those, the contradiction of those two plays back to back. One is designed, the concept is everyone's watching him, so he's a decoy. The next play, it's an end around as if we don't expect people to be watching him. I don't get that.
No, I don't agree with calling that play subsequently right after the dive. I guess I was referring to the opening play of the game. That play that Amari went for 80 yards, that has been Chris John Jones' signature play for the past 2 years with AJ McCarron. We have faked the run to the left. We have bled him behind, hid him behind the line, behind the offensive lineman, and drug him behind them, and we have tossed the ball to him in the flats, and Amari ran the play. And so I loved the play call, and I just wonder who it was for, because Chris John Jones didn't get hurt until the pregame warmups. So what did you think of that play call that we talked about a week ago wanting to see it? And then what did you think about Amari Cooper being the one to run it?
Yeah. Okay. I hear what you're saying. I think it's a great play call. I don't know that on the first play of the game, I'll be honest with you, I don't know that we would have gone to Chris John Jones. And that's not because I don't like Chris John Jones at all. I think it's you want to get your quarterback into a rhythm. And I mean, it's no secret who the lead receiver is, who his favorite target is. And so if you think in sort of the concept of let's get an easy completion, settle down the quarterback, we're on the road, let's do those types of things. I think it's easy might be too strong of a word, but it's very reasonable, very logical to think that play was going to Amari anyways.
Well, it definitely could be. I just thought it was funny, based on how we had said, talked about it the week before. I thought on that play, huge, great block by Chris Black. I just love his unselfish play, and he seems to be, doing the little things.
Now, did you see that Chris Black ran into the formation late?
Yes,
and
I did.
And that was because it would have been Chris John Jones in the formation. Whether or not we would have gone to Jones, I don't know. But and I love the fact that you call him out for the block, because I thought it was interesting that he was late running out on the field. The whole offense was just kind of nonplussed about him not being there. He lined up, and then he threw a key block on the play. I thought that was pretty impressive.
That it's kind of like we've talked about in the past when an offensive lineman goes down, right?
Yes.
The other guy comes in and knows exactly what he's supposed to do.
He should almost get a mini game ball just for that play alone.
Well, I mean, granted, we would have still won the game probably.
Oh, yeah.
But it definitely was a spark to this offense. It was an injection in their arm, which they needed.
Well, and it shut up the crowd real early, too.
Yes. And so
just a minute into the game.
Absolutely. And so I just thought that was a great play call, built up his confidence. It's a play we called a week ago, and great execution by Amari. What else jumped out at you on the offensive side of the ball?
I just can't believe that we're not using our tight ends anymore. There's only three players in this whole game that caught a pass. I know we targeted a couple more. Chris John Jones on another, I'm sorry, Chris Black on another play actually did drop a pass. But we went to Amari. He had 9. DeAndre had 4. And TJ Yeldon, had 1. But we only threw to three different receivers, or I'm sorry, we only had completions to three different receivers. And for the life of me, I don't know what's up with our tight ends and us not working the ball to the tight ends. I know Vogler's banged up. He's been, a high ankle sprain for the last couple weeks, and he kind of torqued his knee, looks like a little bit. We have thrown to the tight end, but not nearly as prolifically, if that's a word, than either of us expected. I thought O.J. Howard by this point would be, a household name.
Well, we kind of called it when Lane Kiffin showed up, right? I mean, we said when Lane Kiffin got there, we said that this is what he does, or at least this is what he did at USC, right? Lane Kiffin has been known to key one wide receiver and give them a ton of opportunities. And so we kind of called at the beginning of the season that everybody, you know, buckle your chin strap because Amari's going to have a lot of catches. And Saban, you know, Saban has been asked a couple different times about the distribution. And Chris Fowler on game day on the, you know, LSU campus, you know, he even commented on it was something like 4-1 or 5-1 that the amount of balls they made it a point to talk about how many opportunities he's had and how many he's caught compared to the next wide receiver. And it was a ridiculous ratio.
It is an incredibly ridiculous ratio. And I agree, you know, the expectation was that Amari would receive catches at a sort of an elevated clip, but there was
which he deserves.
Right. That's fine. I don't debate that, right? But there was an expectation that you know, Kiffin also leverages and utilizes his tight ends, and I am not seeing that. It's almost an afterthought, and it has become almost predictable. You know, I'll go back to the West Virginia game. You and I weren't sitting together at the game, but I said, oh, you know, it looks like, you know, about time to go to the tight end. We threw an interception. We've watched games where we bring in, you know, O.J. Howard, and you think, oh, okay, we're going to go to the tight end, and we force it. You know, down the seam against A&M, you predicted that as we were sitting in the stands. You know, said, it feels about time to go a tight end down the seam. And I actually said, no, we won't do that. We're just apparently not throwing to our tight ends. And, of course, that's what we, you know, that's and we're a little late getting the ball up, or that would have been a touchdown. But it's almost an afterthought, which makes it predictable. You know, we're not going to do it, not going to do it, not going to do it. Oh, yeah, feels right. It feels about right. And I find that a little frustrating that he can be worked in. You know, Howard's not as dynamic as Amari, and I would never argue that, but when you average it or you think about it in the context of their position, Howard is as dynamic as you're going to get out of a tight end, which is comparable to the dynamic play that you get from Amari at wide receiver. Is that fair? Does that make sense?
No, it is, and we talked in the pregame about the depth at wide receiver. And this is the most depth that we've had in quite a while.
Yes.
And, you know, we said a week ago, man, we said that, you know, Amari Cooper is the only one that catches that touchdown pass in the last game. And, you know, and we said that Blake Sims is willing to throw it up there a second earlier than he yes. is to Amari Cooper. And so I'm going to tell you, I think it's a couple things. Number one, he's not able to put the ball in a tight window. They know that. He tried to do that against West Virginia. It got picked off. And so I think this is coach speak for, we got to build up the kid's confidence because he knows the playbook better than Jacob Coker does. We know Jacob Coker has a stronger arm, but we know he can't run this offense yet like we need it to be run.
Yep.
In our minimized mistakes, right? And so when he almost threw a pick six in the game 2 weeks ago, I'm sure Nick Saban just winced and said, because I think it's kind of like Russian roulette, okay? Blake Sims is trying. Blake Sims is getting better. Blake Sims is the best option he has right now, and he is going to put him in opportunities where he can be successful, and Blake Sims is going to skip – I'll put it this way. Amari Cooper is his first progression probably in most of the plays. He's not going to his second and third option if there's any chance in hell Amari Cooper is anywhere open. Done. So I don't go to my number two or three.
Well, and that's okay, right? When your number one option is as good as Amari and he's as open as Amari is, I'm okay with not having to go to your second and third progression. I do think, though, that the Blake's mobility in the pocket allows him the time to get to the second and third option. And we're seeing more and more of that. You know, you can look at the film. You know, ESPN has done a couple of good breakouts where his ability to move in the pocket is allowing him the opportunity to get to that second and third option. And there's some dynamic play our capability that we've not had at the position. Are we seeing it every down? Are we seeing it every drive? No, we're not. But we're seeing it. It's there. It's manifest itself. It's manifesting itself more and more. And it becomes something more and more that opposing teams need to prepare for. I am very pleased, and I've said this before, and I'll say it again. I am very pleased with some of what we're seeing from Blake. I'm very pleased with the progression that he's making to the extent. And look, I'm not suddenly mad at Jake or Jacob. I'm not mad at anybody. I just think that there's a part of me that very much wishes that Sims were only a redshirt sophomore or a junior, and that he could come back next year and even build upon what he's doing this year.
Well, this is a fun topic, right? So I want to spend a couple more minutes on this, because this is why people listen to us the show, is when Jacob Coker has been in the game, he has thrown the ball to our Darius Stewart and Chris Black and other guys like that, correct?
Sure.
And the reason why is because those are the guys he's practicing with. Well, when Nick Saban was asked about this just the other day, you know, his quote was, we need to get some other guys involved. And I think that'd be great. But as long as Cooper is getting open and as long as we're throwing him the ball, I don't think we should tell the quarterback, don't throw it to him.
Sure.
Well, here's what I'll tell you. In the Texas A&M game, okay, I wasn't as rah-rah about the 59-0 because the DBs were 10 yards off of Cooper I could have thrown the ball. I do not understand. I would like to put my resume in to be a defensive coordinator on one of the remaining teams on Alabama's schedule. Give me a chance to shut down Amari Cooper. Let me scheme to shut him down, because to your point, he has currently caught 71 balls. The next closest receiver has caught 23.
Mm-hmm.
And so Tennessee, they showed a stat in this game, David, that after his fourth catch, Amari Cooper had 155 yards.
Yep.
And they showed a stat, David, that Tennessee was ranked number 6 in the country in pass defense, only giving up 165 yards a game.
Yep.
So let's connect the dots. It's halfway through the first quarter. You're only giving up 160 yards a game in SEC football, and you've already given up one guy to catch 155 yards. And oh, by the way, coming into your game, you saw on tape he had already caught 67 balls, right? And so then Gary Danielson, or not Gary Danielson, whoever's doing the game, was talking about how Tennessee's a man defense and they've tried to do something that they're not used to doing and putting a safety over the top. Well, on two of his big plays, Chris Black is in the slot. And we don't know if he was obviously doing what Christian Jones should have been doing. But on two third and long plays in that first quarter, Amari Cooper is out wide to the right. Chris Black is in the slot. Chris Black just runs a post and takes his man to the sideline, David. Amari Cooper just waits a second for Chris Black to clear and just cuts right underneath him. Both plays, identical plays. He's wide open when he catches the ball, and he goes another 15 yards.
Yep.
My point is, you're the number 6 defense in the country, and you can't scheme to shut one man down in the first quarter?
Yeah, I don't understand that, right? Because it's not like it's not kind of like what they did to us, where they roll out something that we weren't expecting, or we're unwrapping a new present here in front of them. Everybody knows Amari. And everyone knows that we're going to try to work him the ball. And if you are at this point in the season, right, we're over halfway through the season, you know, three quarters of the way through the season, whatever it is, their secondary is pretty good, right? I mean, to be ranked 6 in the country this far into the season, they're pretty good. And so are they having to do something a little bit different? Okay, that's fine. But you can't tell me that they don't have good cover corners, good safeties, good personnel to handle that. And it's almost like our running game is like the myth of our running game, that people are going to stack the box to stop this running game that not always exists. And when they do that, they leave Amari open. I mean, I'm going to submit a resume, I guess, with you with some of these other teams. I mean, I would go at least a nickel And I'm putting two guys bracketed on Amari everywhere he goes on the field. And then I'll use my remaining guys to stop the rest of the defense because or the rest of your offense because frankly I'm not worried about the rest of our receivers. And I'm saying this as a defensive coordinator. And again, it's not because I don't like any of them. It's just I don't think we're going to throw to them.
Man, to your point, okay, if I'm the coach and I see your senior wide receiver number 22 is not suited up, his helmet is not in his hands, right? And DeAndre White is your second leading receiver coming into the game, and he's been banged up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you've already thrown the ball 67 times to number 9? Dude, I'm with you. Go dime. Go dime and put one of your safeties in the box next to the linebacker. So now you got six guys in the box to block the – you got six guys in the box for the run, okay? And I'd be putting six DBs in the game because I'd say, guess what? Alabama's not a 4 or 5 wide team. They're not pitching the ball around like West Virginia did to us.
Right.
And so I'm not taking anything away from Amari Cooper, but on his 45-yard touchdown pass on the left side, the DB 6 yards off of him, he doesn't even chuck him at the line of scrimmage. He just runs by him. And Blake makes a nice throw, but it's like they're doing 7-on-7 skeleton drills. I mean, dude, we're good, but we're not as good as they're making us look. I'll say it that way.
Well, and I'll say this. Amari's pretty gifted. Amari is pretty darn gifted. And there are some subtle moves that he's making to throw off some of these corners. Tennessee's got some talent. The Hargraves kid from Florida, obviously made him look pretty bad when they were in coverage. Together, we were able to actually rotate away from him, which I thought was interesting. They didn't follow Amari all over the field, but he has some giftedness to him as well. I don't want to say everything. You know, morons running their defense. For a little bit. Pitching and catching with Amari can make anyone look like a genius. I'll definitely say that. But I just want to go back and I want to say this again. And you can either spend a minute with this or not, but. I'll say again, I wish that that Blake Sims had another year coming back because I would rather go in and look. It's a whole other season, and we'll be hyped up for it as well. But I would feel better entering fall camp knowing I've got Blake building upon this season, a second-year starter, than going into next season knowing that we're breaking in a brand-new starter. And we're going to have some of this learning curve again. I think we got spoiled – with McElroy and then
we were a long span
between breaking in a new quarterback. And heck, you can even go with
John Parker.
Parker ahead of that. We had quite a number of years where we only broke in three quarterbacks. Now we're going to break in one and we're going to break in another one next year. I'd rather have Sims back.
Oh no, I understand, and having 2-3 year starters back to back, helps, and my comments wasn't taking anything away from Amari Cooper, and I think Blake Sims has played better at this point than I would have expected him to play. I'm just with you. I would double cover Amari. I'm sorry, they didn't double cover in this game. They had a safety over the top, but the safety is over the top of two wide receivers. I would have said two guys are going to cover Amari Cooper, period. UDB cover the short to intermediate. You take the long stuff. I got another safety in the middle helping out in my dime. And I'm going to say to the quarterback, hey, you've only thrown the ball to these other guys about 30 times combined.
Right.
These guys are going to beat me. He's not. He will not catch a ball tonight.
Right.
Or if he does, it's for 5 yards.
Yep. Yep.
And I think we're going to see that from LSU. I think LSU is not going to let Amari Cooper beat us or beat them.
Yeah. No, that's fair. I think that we're going to see some attempts at that, and there's a lot of teams that have tried to do that. Tennessee, I don't know. To put that many yards up, 224 is pretty stinking amazing. But,
no, it is. It is. I'll tell you one other thing real quick is while I'm happy that we are having success, I also am concerned that this over this over reliance on Amari is hurting us. And this is not what you want to do to a great depth of wide receivers to get them all upset because they're not getting any balls, right? I hope that we can get this distribution more in line before the season's over, because you got a lot of number one and two wide receivers in the nation coming to Alabama, which you and I both know never happened. And I don't want them to stop coming because we're now labeled as somebody that just gets the ball to one guy.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. You know, we have no trouble getting talented running backs because we run so many of them. At wide receiver, you could make the case that, you know, we're putting a receiver at the top of everyone's sort of All-America list, a potential Heisman candidate. And, of course, that's going to help lure recruits. Yeah, but we've got a roster full of talented receivers that can't see a ball. And, you know, recruits see that as well. You'd rather see a distributed ball, a bunch of guys getting 50 or 60 catches, you know, 50 maybe, than, you know, one guy getting such a disproportionate. And I get the uber talent that Cooper has, and I'm not mad at him. And look, you know, go with what works. And as long as you're going to let me continue to pitch and catch with maybe one of the better receivers in the country, then I'm going to do that. I get that. It's easy to kind of sit back where we are and say, gosh, you still got to spread it around a little bit. And there's no reason in the world that we can't do it. And we've talked about this. You know, when they're healthy, take a Chris John, take a DeAndre, take a Chris Black, take a Ardarius, take some of these guys and say, you know, absolutely, we're going to, you know, we've got, you know, 3 to 4 design plays that we're going to go with, you know, go to you, you know, during the game. And you can't do that with everyone because, you know, 3 times 4 is 12, and then you're going to get, you know, 8 to Amari is 20, and you want to run the ball, you know, a couple times. You kind of hamstring yourself if you have sort of a forced distribution. But you can go in with the idea of saying, I'm going to run some plays from each of these buckets, and that I am going to try to distribute the ball a little more. I think that we could be more intentional in that area.
No, I agree. And the other reason I'm making this point, too, is I was looking forward to see how we would handle this against the number 6 ranked pass defense, because I don't want us to get into the playoffs, right, and a team do it to us then. I want it to happen now, right? I don't want it to be in the semifinals or the national championship game and they shut down Amari for the first time and we're sitting there saying, well, what do we do now?
Right.
He's
We've
covered.
Never seen this.
He's covered. Yep. Really? It's called football. I want to see it now. Sorry.
I'm with you.
I'm just impatient. Anything else on offense?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I think probably a couple of things. We came out like gangbusters. I had sort of a quiet spell in the game. But, you know, overall, there's a lot of diamonds even in that rough spell. I mean, we were 11 of 15 on third down. When they came and made it, you know, 17 to 27, they made it, you know, a 2-score game. We really, as a team, sort of stood up, planted our foot, and, you know, put together a 13-play drive, 76 yards. You know, Derrick Henry's 28-yard touchdown burned some time off the clock. Blake Sims had two amazing, well, okay, maybe one was amazing and one was really, really nice. First down runs on third down to continue to move the chains. When we had to score, we did. And so that's something that that we can think about.
Let me pause you for a quick second there, because I want to stick with what you just said there, because this was one of the other things that I wanted to talk about. I would say, while I don't think we were going to lose the game,
sure,
that run on 3rd and 9 that you're talking about,
yes,
I think was the turning point in the game.
Yes. Yes.
And so
play of the game
by far. And so on that 3rd and 9 at our 48, when everybody watched the game, when he sat there and there was nothing there, and he was out there in the flats like we've been rolling him out, and he took off and put it into that second gear, and he still had 3 yards, and he was like, I'm stuck. And so he sat there and sacrificed his body, and he could have easily separated a shoulder. He sacrificed his body, and he was landing on his non-throwing shoulder, and then he flipped that arm out there. He could have easily separated a shoulder with that play. And he said, I need to get this for the team. And that's why I want to be clear that he's the right guy for the job right now.
Yep.
Because that is why they got that touchdown to make it 34-17.
Yes. Yes. Completely agree.
What was your other point?
Well, it's a continue, you know, and I'm glad that we kind of underscored and emphasized that. But, you know, when we absolutely needed to score, you know, to separate the margin, you know, if it's a 10-point game and we turn the ball back over to them and, you know, they get a touchdown, that starts to get a little bit scary. And so when we needed to outpace them, we needed to spread the margin. We put together, after a couple of punts, we put together a 13-play drive, 76 yards, a couple of key plays there by Blake Sims. And we had a chance to put another touchdown on the board. Fowler fumbled going into the end zone. But that was at the end of an 11-play, 78-yard drive. And so we had two sort of command performances right there, you know, and I would love to see a touchdown tack it, you know, up over 40, you know, 41-20 starts to look a lot better. But I just want to kind of hats off to the leadership on the offense that they were able to sort of rise up in that moment two times, you know, one we fumbled, the other time we scored the touchdown, but that's two scoring drives that we could have had. And in sort of an extension of that, I want to give a tip of the cap to the offensive line. There was a little bit of shuffling there. I want to get your perspective on that. But a little bit of shuffling there when Cameron Robinson went down. What do you think about moving Leon Brown over to the tackle spot and bringing in Bradley Bozeman to backfill at the guard?
I was very surprised. I did not think that Leon Brown has not been running second string at left tackle, and so Grant Hill has.
Yep.
And so I was surprised. I thought for sure we would see Grant Hill in that situation.
Yep.
Grant Hill got some run there last year. You know, it's a position that requires some athleticism, right? I mean, you're guarding the blind spot. And so I think Leon Brown was put in a very difficult situation. Granted, not the defensive end that Arkansas had, but when I saw the move, I was like, "Whoa, okay."
Yes.
And then he played the position like a guard.
He did. He did.
But he was recruited to come to Alabama to be our savior at left tackle. So I thought it was kind of interesting that, you know, he comes in with the press out of JUCO to be a tackle. He's found a home at guard, and then in a pressure situation, that's who comes off, you know, that's who we slide out there.
Yeah, that's the rotation. So there was really, you know, and you emphasize one, I don't disagree with anything there. I thought it was almost fitting that he got a chance to really perform there over the freshman phenom that's come in and taken over the position, a position, by the way, that was going to be his because he was the JUCO phenom, right? And so there's a little bit of sort of hand in glove that's kind of a neat storyboard. But, you know, the other side of that sort of double shift is bringing Bozeman in to play guard.
Yes.
You know, Leon and Shank have been back and forth at that guard position. Dominic Jackson has been spending time at the guard position. And everyone get out of the way. Bradley Bozeman is going to come in. And I don't think if this were to have happened 3 weeks ago before Bozeman came in and spent two weeks at center, I don't think the same shift happens. I think it's pretty impressive. And so, you know, hats off to Bozeman for really stepping in, seizing his opportunity at guard or at center. And then when the starting center comes back, he's still right there ready, demonstrated his ability last week, you know, ready to come in and play at the guard position.
Well,
3 weeks ago, we wouldn't have seen that.
We would not have seen that. And Saban was asked 2 weeks ago about some of this offensive line play. And the two backups that he pointed out was Bradley Bozeman and Grant Hill.
Yeah.
He did not talk about any other backups.
Right.
And I don't have the quote, but it basically said anybody's number can be called at any time. And these guys have come in and been able to do what they were able to do because of their work in practice.
Yep.
And I'm going to read between the lines and tell you that Bradley Bozeman and Grant Hill have been working harder at practice, even knowing they're not a starter, than some of the other guys have.
I think that's fair. I absolutely think that's fair. You know, it's hard to read that any other way. And I think that's appropriate. I'm excited about, and we talked about this in the earlier part of the season, those that have been listening, is the depth of along the offensive line. We've been talking about, you know, we have a legitimate two deep. We legitimately have, you know, 6 and 7 and 8 starter quality guys. And we're starting to see that, right? Because almost everyone on the offensive line has had some downtime, has had some out time this season.
Except for Ari.
Well, I guess except for Ari, but you know, he certainly missed all, which is, I guess I get the joke there, right? That is irony there, because I think and I like the guy. He's the most fragile of the bunch, and he's the and only
he's
one
been
that
the
has,
consistent one. Yep.
Yeah. And so that's, yeah, that's kind of interesting, but he has missed time in practice. And so, you know, in that, an ironic silver lining is his inability to practice because of injury. He's still playing the games, but not able to practice, that has helped develop this depth that has sustained us during these injuries. Cause Tommy, we've had seasons where we've had, you know, you and me may as well be the sixth lineman, because if we have someone go down out of our top five, we're sunk. And what was the ball game when JB Klausner had to go, was the center and went out, and someone else had, and it just, the whole offensive line just crumpled like a wadded up sheet of paper, because, you know, we had lost our foundation at the center. Well, now we're talking about, we have played 7 and 8 guys in sort of starter roles, first team roles. This is the kind of depth across the offensive line that, you know, I've not seen, you know, sort of first sight. You know, we've not had this in 20 years.
Oh, sure. And this is only going to help Alfonso Taylor, and this is only going to help Dominic Jackson. This is only going to help, you know, these guys in practice, and you know, this is open competition, right? I mean, the way I see it right now is we've got some open competitions. It's kind of like there's not a lot of gap between the number ones and the number twos at some of these positions. And so a guy like Alfonso Taylor is like, okay, here comes the bye week. I'm ready to win me a job. And I love that, because that's what we need. And but kudos to Bozeman to apparently putting the necessary effort in practice to be that guy. And when he came in once again, I rewound several times and had to keep an eye on him and Leon Brown at that point, because you can't miss Leon had gone to left tackle.
Yep.
And I thought they both played pretty well considering.
Sure.
Once again, sign me up for defensive coordinator. I know Leon Brown has been guard. If I was Tennessee when he went to tackle, I would have been blitzing a cornerback off the edge. I would have been blitzing a linebacker around the defensive end. I would have been flooding outside of him and said, okay, guard, I'm going to make you stop it, and I'm going to do it 3 times in a row.
Yep.
And they did not do that.
No, I'm with you. I definitely agree with that. Let me put my tinfoil hat on for a minute and just throw a conspiracy idea at you. Huh, Cam Robinson goes out with a high ankle sprain. That seems to happen a lot against the Volunteers, huh?
You know, I it does. And so that's fair. That's a fair comment from the years that we have seen this, going back to Sean Alexander.
Yep.
But I will tell you, in this play, when it happened, I had to go back and watch it several times, and an energetic Cam was just trying to go help and push the pile. I truly think it was an accident, but it really frustrates me, because you want to say, Cam, just don't even be in there, right? Just don't, because that's when things happen, when legs get tangled up, and there was no benefit, right? Nothing got accomplished from him going over there and trying to push the pile. And so when I saw it, it was very frustrating because now you probably will not see him against Mississippi State. So your experiment that we just spent 5 minutes talking about, you know, thank goodness for a bye week.
Yes.
Thank goodness bye week's here.
Yep. Oh, I'm so glad. And you know, Cam Robinson's going to want to play against LSU.
Yes.
You know, being from Louisiana. And so he's going to, you know, roll, right? Because he's going to want to get out there and participate in that game. And I hope he's back to a condition that he can.
We need him for the stretch run, though.
Without question.
Well, hey, real quick on that fumble that Jalston Fowler made, I did find it interesting that, you know, because we call it fair here real quick. First of all, I find it interesting that the series before is when Blake had his fumble, okay, that allowed the garbage field goal.
Yep.
And I say Blake's fumble. Derrick Henry, that looked like that was on Derrick. Did not even look for the ball.
Yeah, it's hard to tell that's a risk of the zone read, is the quarterback's putting it in there. And sometimes maybe you don't know.
Yep.
As a running back, you don't know if he's going to keep it or not. Because he's key. You're looking your key, and he's looking at his key. It's hard to know. You know, unless you know there was a report that came out that I missed. It's gonna be hard to know.
I'm glad you said it that way. That's the disadvantage of the zone read. Yeah. Yes.
So
well, I found it interesting after that series. That on that next series that Fowler fumbled, you know, Saban came out there and said, okay, we got 9 minutes left in the game. It's time to take the air out of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And so I found it interesting that the very first play, he throws to Amari Cooper, and then he shuts it down.
Yep.
And then they had 10 runs in a row.
Yes. Yes.
I just thought that was interesting that it was the Derrick Henry show, play after play after play after play after play.
Yep. Yep. Well, give me your mini game ball on offense.
You know, I want to give it to Chris Black, but I think it's more critical to give it to Bozeman and Leon Brown.
Okay,
but for the reasons we talked about, not to bore the listeners with the same spiel again, but we would have fallen apart and given up 5 or 6 sacks to our quarterback in years past with that kind of shuffling in a ball game.
Yes. Yep. I had marked Leon Brown. Is my mini game ball. I was kind of hoping you were going to pick one and I was going to take the other. But, yeah, I think we're both sort of conceptually we're doing that. I think, kind of hats off to those guys because, you know, that was one player going down that caused us to make two position changes on the offensive line. And then the line as a whole kind of adapted. We didn't see a drop-off in communication. These two long drives late in the game, 76-yarder and a 78-yarder, unfortunately, one ended in a fumble, but that's a lot of yardage, and that was
shuffling.
That was with the shuffled line. So that is impressive. The Tennessee fans were rowdy at that point, so it wasn't late in a blowout. They were rowdy. They were supporting their defense. You know, that bodes well to the depth that we're developing, not just for this season but beyond. But the way they were able to perform together. That speaks, and I'm emphasizing it, and you know why I am because you agree, and maybe the casual fan didn't even know that there was, different guys and on the lineup and sort of all the linemen are kind of the same. No, this is a big deal. This is a big deal. The fact that they both were able to go in that type of environment, that there was no miscommunication across the offensive line, and they continued to acquit themselves very well. Two long drives, one ended in scoring, one should have. That's a big deal. And so I don't want to make it bigger than it is, but I don't want it to be paved over either. And so I think we've given it the appropriate attention, so I'll move on. But glad to see that, and that's something that we can build upon. Flip the field over to defense. Talk to me about something on defense that stood out to you.
Reggie Ragland. There's nothing else I need to say, man. Dude was even talked about a Butkus semifinalist today. Are you kidding me?
No, you're right. He made the finalist list. And Tony,
go ahead.
No, I was going to say, let's underscore that. The finalist list came out. This is not a watch list where, you and I can make a watch list. This is the finalist list. This is down to 15 linebackers across the country. That's a big deal too.
it is a big deal. And, you know, I'm just so happy for the kid because, you know, he's seizing his moment. We've said that, you know, we said in the preseason that we needed some linebackers to step up and to try to fill one of the three hats that CJ Mosley was wearing. Okay. Is he wearing them all? No.
No.
Is he trying to put all three of them on as best he can, even though some hats are too small? Yes, he is. Okay. And so he knocked the ball away from the tight end on a pass play where he was beat. But you know what? It was an incomplete pass. Okay. He rocked some guys behind the line of scrimmage with that 250 pounds of force. And then he put his helmet on the football when he calls that play.
Yes.
And it blows my mind with the talent we have on defense that we can't create turnovers. As much as we're practicing this in practice, and you've talked about this on shows past, I'm just so happy for the kid. The kid is becoming a playmaker.
Yeah, we're going to have to start the Raglan report or something because this dude, I mean, he is something else. You know, nine tackles and that fumble. And I love, you know, Brock Huard called him, you know, 250 pounds of violence. I mean, that's about right. I mean,
but that's the way you teach tackling, right?
Yes.
How often are we talking about these DBs who are tackling like girls? I'm sorry. Right. They're tackling like little girls. And they're sitting there and bumping their shoulders, and they're doing the celebration thing after a big play, just calling it a tackle. And, you know, he went in there and tackled the way you're taught and put his helmet on the football. And that was a situation where they were gaining a little bit of momentum, and they were having success with that stupid running quarterback. And for a few minutes, he put that little running quarterback in his place. And I just thought it was awesome.
No, that was awesome. Hey, did you notice on, you know, that fumble play, we get the ball. Did you know there was a flag on that play, unnecessary roughness, you know, at the end of the play? I don't know if you went back and looked at it, but it was on, I had to. They called it on Jaron Reed. And I was like, well, what the heck did Jaron do? I didn't see anything. And they didn't show anything on the replay. So I went back and sort of.
He absolutely, you know, did something he shouldn't have done.
Well, I'm going to laugh about what he did, though. You know, and so I watched him through that play. And so the, you know, Eddie Jackson steps out of bounds, plays over, and he takes just one last shove at the back of an offensive lineman. And my thought, and I laughed. I was watching the game by myself and I laughed out loud. I was like, yep, he got a lick in on one of those offensive linemen that's probably been holding him inside all day. And he said, take that, sucker.
I'm sure you're right. I wish I would have been in Neyland Stadium so I could have put my binoculars on Saban, because I'm sure Saban gave him an earful, because it was well after the play. He did it behind the guy's back. While I'm sure it was a payback, that's not Alabama football. And thank goodness that did not cost us any more than it did.
100% agree. 100% agree. I mean, you know, I kind of rationalized it in the moment, and I said, you know what? They had the ball. Now we've got it. I don't care where you line it up on the field. We've got it, and you don't. So, in terms of a cheap penalty, was it? Yeah, he shouldn't have done that. But in terms of a penalty that really didn't have that much of an impact on a turnover like that, it's kind of the right time to do it if you're gonna do it. And I'm not advocating that you should do it.
No. I'm with you. I would have liked to have seen how quickly Saban greeted him coming off the sideline.
Yes.
Hey, what else jumped out at you on defense?
Well, I have to give hats off to their quarterback. It's kind of the buried lead, I guess, on this side of the ball. But, you know, Josh Dobbs wasn't going to play.
Played all year.
Well, hasn't played all year, was going to be redshirted. That was the intent of the Tennessee staff. You know, it's easy to say, and I think it's pretty clear to see, that he was their third string quarterback. And there's a part of me, and you'll disagree with me a little bit here, and that's fine. But there's a part of me that said, I bet you we had zero expectation that we were going to see the running quarterback. We prepared to see Worley because we thought that, you know, probably that he was still going to play, because it was sort of a game time thing that it was officially announced that he wasn't going to play. And we thought we'd see Peterman. And we knew what we had in those guys. We didn't have any mobility at the quarterback. And just how we talk about roster management, we can sort of look at another team and sort of predict, kind of forecast, not we, but our coaches who are, you know, more intimately familiar and tracking the roster than we are, and say, oh, absolutely, they're going to try to redshirt this guy. And at this point in this season, they're not going to sort of lose or burn a year of his eligibility. We're probably not going to see him. And so we didn't prepare for a running quarterback. And so we saw an offensive style of play that we were absolutely not prepared for. Doesn't mean we couldn't have adjusted better. I think we should have. But I think they came out, put him out there, and I just think it was something we weren't that prepared for.
I'm sure it's something we were not prepared for, but I will quickly disagree with you when I will say that we are the coaching staff that burned a red shirt on D-liner that we talked about last week, and he didn't see the field the rest of the season. And so we have the ability to burn red shirts that make no sense, just like all coaches do. And so the fact that he played against us last year and had some success running the ball against us, the fact that Worley hurt his shoulder last year, the fact that he had already been sacked 30 times this year, that it's a shoulder possible thing right now. I'm sorry. The coaches should have prepared for Dobbs. Am I the coaches? No. Am I as smart as they are? No. But I'm sorry. They should have read the tea leaves, and they should have prepared for Dobbs.
I think that some of that's easy to see in hindsight. I think that with the limited number of hours of practice and preparation that they get, I think they rolled their dice on, we're going to see Worley, we're going to see Peterman, they're going to redshirt. It's easier to project smarter decisions on other people, even when sometimes our coaching staff makes decisions that we question. It's easier to project the smarter decision maybe on the other group. Now, it turns out playing Dobbs was a smart decision because, you know, he came – I don't want to say the game was in jeopardy necessarily, but, you know, he gave them signs of life. They put 20 points on the board that they would not have put up if he were not playing. He had a lot of offense that they would not have seen had he not come out on the field. So,
oh sure, but
playing him was not a bad decision. But I just think that, you know, and here's look, I'm going to draw back from my personal experience. When I was a senior in high school, our team sucked. We were 1-9 that season. We were horrible. We were awful. The one game that we won was after a bye, and we completely reinstalled a brand new offense. And so we had been running some sort of pro set, something, who the hell knows, Veer. We were running a Veer offense, and we shifted to a wing T. And so the poor team, and they weren't that good either, that we played coming off the bye, that was our one win because – man, they could study film up one side and down the other, and they had no clue what we were going to do because, hell, we had just installed a brand-new offense. Nobody knew. And so it's in my mind, and maybe I'm just wanting to make a historical experience for me relevant, but to me, I see a parallel there, that it was this kid has a style of play that has not been sort of fully put on tape, and – we just weren't prepared for him to come in and play like that. I mean, the kid played – forget just the raw athleticism he had. The dude came out and played with a lot of moxie because here he's lining up against Alabama, you know, down, you know, a couple of scores, and I haven't played a snap all season. I mean, you know, you're going to get a lot of sophomores wetting their pants in that situation. He not only demonstrated his athleticism, but certainly some moxie in the situation.
Sure he did, man, but I'm sorry. I'm not letting our coaches off the hook. These guys are working 20-hour days, and we've heard the hours they keep during the season, okay? They sleep at the facility. Do we struggle with quarterbacks that sit in the pocket like a statue? No. We struggle against running quarterbacks. Who do we always struggle against? Running quarterbacks. And so they should have prepared for Dobbs, period. They shouldn't have had to do a lot to prepare for Peterman. Sure. Okay. What if Worley plays? Okay. All right. We got tape on Worley. Oh, let's look at 5 minutes on Peterman. Next, let's look at Dobbs. Yep. The fact that they were not prepared for Dobbs, is bad job on their part. Plain and simple.
Well, at the end of the day, I'm gonna cast my ballot in the direction that you're going, because you know, when you consider the balance of our of our schedule,
our body of work, man, who do we struggle against?
No, always. I understand. Nope. I'm taking the long way around to where you are, but yeah, well, who do we struggle with and who do we have left on our schedule? We've got Dak Prescott on our schedule, and we've got Nick Marshall, and who the hell knows who LSU is going to roll out there. But you know, we've got a couple of mobile quarterbacks that have the chance to beat us. And so, yeah, we should always have a couple of periods of practice against a mobile quarterback, because we need a lot of rep against that. And maybe had we done that, and who's to say we're not doing it, but gosh, we could have manifest that a little bit better on the field Saturday.
Well, I wonder if it speaks to two things, because I will tell you, I felt better about how we were going to match up against Mississippi State until I saw this.
Yeah.
Because Dobbs is no Prescott. Prescott no. is Tim Tebow Jr.
Yes.
And the fact that Dobbs was able to rush 19 times for 100 yards concerns me, because that makes me wonder if the big physical linebackers we have in the middle, right, do not have the speed to get to that running quarterback.
I don't think Prescott's as fast as Dobbs. He's a bigger guy. He's a lot heavier. He's going to have a little bit of a different running style, but I'll say this, and I would attribute it if I could remember where I read this, but if we go on and have success against Mississippi State and Nick Marshall at Auburn, we probably need to give a little bit of thanks to Josh Dobbs for exposing us. Reminding us that we have a weakness there.
And, right before the bye week. Thank
right
you,
Right before the bye, so we can double down on that.
No, absolutely. I agree with that. I also thought it was interesting on defense that Dylan Lee got a little run. Dylan Lee came in the second half and played one of the outside linebacker positions. Excuse me. And there was one play that I'm sure you saw on TV where they were running to his side on the edge.
Yep.
He was being blocked by the tight end who was bigger than he was. He held the outside shoulder free like he was supposed to do, tackled the guy out of bounds. Lance Thompson runs over to him like, good job, kid. And for the limited snaps that he had, he got two tackles on the day. And we're going to need his contribution sometime between now and the end of the season.
Yeah, I think we're going to see more and more of him as the game goes on. I want to talk about, and this would almost, if we did a Tennessee podcast, this would almost be more Tennessee offense than it is our defense. But I want to talk about their freshman tight end, Ethan Wolf. And while we did not recruit Ethan Wolf on name alone, that is an awesome name for a tight end. While we didn't recruit him on that alone, I don't know. But he had 10 catches, a touchdown. It reminded me of the day that Jason Witten, as a freshman, you know, wore us out all up and down the field. But there was one play, and I'm going to flip this almost back to talking about our offense and talking about our tight end coach. And almost our MIA tight ends and kind of what's going on here. But this, when you consider that he is a freshman tight end, and on one of his receptions, he lined up, lined up at the tight end a little bit off the line, and Jarek Williams was in coverage, and so he came off the line, ran right at Jarek Williams, kind of broke down like he was going to block him. And so what does Jarek do? Jarek says, well, I don't want to be blocked because they're running this way. And so he runs away from the tight end. And the tight end, who's breaking down, acting like he's going to block Jarek, then releases and catches a nice, 8 or 9 yard pass. And I'm thinking, man, that is NFL savvy. That is a senior savvy play to do that. And so you tell me which of these two teams is coaching their tight ends, because that was pretty stinking amazing. That was pretty impressive right there.
Well, I'm surprised that they did not go after, because, you know, he finished with one catch on the day, but he had the drop that he beat Reggie Ragland on, you know.
Are you talking about Ethan?
I'm talking about Ethan, yes.
No, he had 10 catches.
Okay, I might just be looking at a different number there than you're looking at. I was showing one catch on the day for 10 yards. But I will tell you that I think that he exposed a weakness that we continue to have at the linebacker position, and I'm surprised that we are not figuring out a way to compensate for it, because it is definitely something that teams going forward are going to continue doing against us.
You're right. I misread that stat line, but the catch that he made, and so it was a 10 yard reception, was that where he just broke down like he was going to block Jarek, and then released and caught the pass for 10 yards. And look, he was going against the safety, and it's just the scheme that we had on, because he was going out towards the flat and not attacking the deep middle over the linebacker. And I agree with you there. We should still, you know, we want to be a defensive coordinators that are playing against us. Well, if I'm an offensive coordinator playing against us, I'm attacking our linebackers in coverage. And that, I don't disagree with that. I just think, and so his day was less impressive than I thought, but I am still no less impressed. I don't know who the hell stats I was looking at when I came up with that, but I am no less impressed with that play that he made against Jarek. That's just savvy to, this guy can cover me one-on-one unless he thinks he doesn't need to cover me. Then I'm going to be open. That's just impressive. And you know what? That's coaching. That is, you coach a player to do that.
Sure.
And so I still go back and ask the question, who's coaching tight ends? Because we can't even find our tight ends with a map.
No, that's true. No, that's true. Hey, I wanted to couple other things very quickly. Cyrus Jones on his pass interference, it was a good call. Saban's been quoted that we teach these guys to turn and play on the ball. I know you love your Cyrus. He continues to not turn to the ball. It drives me crazy. He could be called more than he's being called. Mm. And he definitely was guilty of an obvious pass interference on that play.
I didn't think that was nearly as egregious as you're making it sound. That would have been a very good no call. More damaging in not turning to the ball was Tony Brown. That touchdown could have very easily been broken up had he just turned to the ball. Because
none of our DBs turn to the ball, man. None of them do. Well, when do they ever turn to the ball? When? They don't. The current DBs that are out there do not turn to the ball. They do not.
I would not make such a blanket statement, but I would definitely say that Tony did not, and he could have broken up that pass. And I don't think the pass interference on Cyrus was that bad. I think he's the beneficiary is the wrong word, but he's the victim of some of the worst calls I've seen in the secondary this season. They seem to all go against him. There's some that it would have been, you know, good no calls. I think this would have been a good no call, but they seem to all be going against him. And, you know, I still do like my Cyrus. I think he's – I still think, you know, hey, he picked off a ball, so he saw that one coming. But I think he has played very, very well at the corner position. I mean
– I don't think you can say very, very – well, see, I don't think you can say very twice, but we can agree to disagree on that. Hey, what did you think of Jarek Williams? I know Jarek Williams is still coming back from being banged up. I thought this was the best star he's played this season.
Yeah, he seems to really, really be coming on and playing stronger and stronger. And I had every intention last week, and I hate to kind of go back a week, but I had every intention of calling out one of his plays last week. And hell, he probably should have gotten a mini game ball last week when, he was on a play, he was hit, helicoptered, stuck with the play and made it and tackled the running back. That was a pretty darn impressive play, and he didn't have a sort of a standout play like that this week, but he acquitted himself very, very well, and I think we owe him some praise for how he has come back and played well, because I certainly expected Geno to take that star spot and just kind of run with it this season. And that just hasn't happened. And Jarek, when he's been, you know, in and out for injury, he seems to really be finding himself at that position. And so, you know, the balance of the season, we may see him make some pretty big plays for us.
He just seems comfortable.
Yes.
And we don't have enough, guys in the secondary that seem comfortable. And he seems like he's not clueless. He knows. Let me take that back. Not clueless. Other guys don't seem clueless. He just seems like he's comfortable. Like you said, he knows his assignment. He knows what he's supposed to do on that part of the field. And it's like one section of the secondary we don't have to worry about.
You know, I think, you know, comfortable is exactly the right way to say it. You know, that is just one word. He looks comfortable out there. That's just one phrase that you know, you could spend three paragraphs explaining. But if you just get what that means, and I know you do, you used it. But that very much characterizes how he looks out there. You know, he's not as dynamic as a Landon Collins, and I would never sort of compare him to Landon. But those are two guys that seem very comfortable in the secondary. And there's others, but no one seems as comfortable as those two.
No, absolutely. Hey, who gets your mini game ball? I'm going to let you go first so I don't take yours.
One thing I do want to say about Landon, when he was out with the cramp, Tennessee put together a 15-play, 84-yard touchdown drive when he was out. I don't think they string that many plays together for that many yards with Landon in there. I just don't think so. So we need him to, you know, start eating some more bananas, get that potassium up so he's not cramping up, give him some water and electrolytes because we need Landon out there. But going mini game ball, I'm going to tell you who had the quietest big day on the team, I think, is A'shaun Robinson. He combined for, you know, seven tackles, one, you know, shared in a tackle for loss. You know, some of those were assists, I get it, but I thought he played a pretty strong game. On the inside there without, you know, registering a sack or making a sort of a headline play. He was just plugging. And that's what we need, and we needed a little bit more of that across the defensive front. But he was out there doing work, and so I'm giving a tip of the cap to A'shaun.
Okay. Well, man, I'm going to give mine to somebody who still qualifies as a mini game ball since you created these rules and you didn't follow them. I'm going to give mine to Da'Shawn Hand, and I want to give it to him now before he becomes a stud and doesn't qualify for mini game ball, which is why I'm not giving it to Reggie because he's already kind of
sure. Oh yeah,
he's already graduated past there now.
Yep,
he only had one tackle for the day. It was a 9-yard sack on the second to last play of the game for Tennessee.
Yep,
this is the number one player in the nation last year who is not scared to come to Alabama and go play at some other school so he can start every play for his freshman year.
Yep.
He comes to Alabama because he relishes competition, in my opinion. And he might have been one of the players that Saban has said, I got to talk to these guys because, you know, this is not the roadmap that they're used to, right? I don't know if it's him, but my gosh, he's the top player in the nation. And he's biding his time, and he didn't get to play many plays. But by damn, when he does come in, he makes a sack.
Yep.
So just, you know, kudos to him.
He's going to be one of those guys that and you
unselfish son of a gun.
No, I'm with you. Look, you know how this works, right? You know how this works with our fan base and you know, people that we talk football with. He's going to be a guy that people forget about next year. Because we're going to sign another big recruiting class, and there's going to be next year's Da'Shawn Hand. There's going to be next year's sort of, you know, shiny object that people are going to forget about him.
They're going to say, what school? They're going to say, where did he come from?
Yes. Right. So next year when he busts on the scene, everyone's going to say, oh, I forgot about him, or, oh, yeah, that guy. And that's who Da'Shawn Hand is going to be. And so if you're listening to us, you're probably not going to forget about him. I'm just saying don't forget about him. Write his name somewhere and just remember, like, this dude's going to be a stud next year because he's going to be when he gets an increased opportunity.
Who's your mini game ball, man?
No, I did it first. You made me go first, and then you chastised my pick. But
I got so wound up in mine, I forgot that.
Yeah.
Hey, go ahead to special teams, man. Did you enjoy seeing some punting again?
Well, you know, special teams this week was kind of
Oh, come on, man. Your guy had a 60-yarder.
No, he did. Well, and see, that's part of it. I mean, he's so routinely awesome now that
he no longer qualifies for mini game balls.
I'm just saying. No, well, no, look, let's put it in context, right? And so he had four punts, and he averaged 42.8 yards. And is it wrong that I look at that and say, huh, that's low?
That is low for him. And he even had a 60-yarder to add to that. So but he did pin three inside the 20. I know you're being sarcastic, but he had, for our listeners, he pinned three inside the 20. So field position determined those yards in this ball game for him. That's what hurt his stats a little
bit. I'm with you. I do understand that he did three in the 20, and he did have a long and he had, you know, they had one return against him for -4 yards. And so the way he puts it up there, you know, he's literally not out kicking his coverage. That expression is used a lot. Its basis is out kicking your coverage and letting someone have a big return. So that's kind of funny, but no, here's the context to me that just is off the page. You know, so 42.8 average, and we feel like, oh, that's really below his season. You could say, oh, that's kind of an off day for him. But when Cade Foster averaged, you know, what, 39 as a freshman and 40 point something as a sophomore, sophomore, and he got into like 42, 43 is a junior, and that's when you and I both really said, this dude is coming along. This guy's been working with that kicking consultant. This guy is and Cade had a great career. He ended up having a really, really good career. But JK, you know, had a performance that for him we think is that for when it was the season average for Cade, we were high-fiving. And I mean, are we super spoiled at the punter position already? Yes. I don't know. I just think that that juxtaposition is very interesting.
No, we are spoiled already just because, this could be our first 3 years and gone pro punter that we've ever seen that we will never see again. Hey, let's quickly talk on special teams about your boy Alfonso. I saved this for special teams. You know, you're currently not running with the ones at the guard position. You know, we make an explosive play. We get a touchdown. We line up for the extra point.
Yes.
You freaking move. Yes. You cause us to miss the damn extra point. Boy, that didn't help going into the bye week for Alfonso.
No, that really didn't. And it's one of those frustrating things that, you know, we beat him by 14. I get it. It's just that you never know when that one point is going to make a difference. You know,
and I'm not picking on Alfonso specifically, but this is a special team segment. And once again, it's just doing the little things, and we're still not having a flawless special teams ball game.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I mean, you know, ask Arkansas what a 1 point in a PAT difference means.
Yes.
You know, so it's just every time I see it, I'm like, I wonder if that point's going to mean anything later. And, you know, fortunately it didn't. And, you know, for Alabama, you never want it to, but you know, when it does, it can be big. And so fortunately it didn't. But yeah, that's nothing for him to, you know, you take a gimme and it turns out to be a miss. And frankly, hell, that's not what we need our kicker to experience. You know, let's go out there and kick a gimme PAT, get a little bit of confidence. And so, you know, we don't know if Griffith's not, you know, sitting out there the rest of the day kind of second guessing himself. We just, you know, we don't know these things. And so,
and thank goodness we didn't have any
equation altogether. Freaking line up right.
Well, thank goodness we didn't have any field goal attempts to prove it. Right.
Right.
What if he'd have needed to kick a field goal? Where would that have turned out? He did have 6 kickoffs on the day, 3 touchbacks. The opening kick was our worst coverage of the game.
Yep.
You know, they caught it at the goal line and returned it 33 yards, which was very frustrating. Our boy Reggie Ragland decided to clean up and save the day on that play, or it could have been a lot worse. So I just, you know, I hope we have some one-on-one coaching. You know, they use the bye week to talk about what have you done good and what do you feel like you can work on, and they ask each player that. I hope they ask all the coaches that. And I hope we ask the tight end and special teams coach, what have you done so far, and what do you think you can work on from here on out?
Yeah, I agree. We definitely need some self-scouting, and you know, we'll kind of see how that plays out. Well, this week we've got a bye, which – you know, we seem to have, you know, almost a really good
perfect,
you know,
schedule.
You know, play four by, and then, you know, play four. So I like the sort of the distribution. I like, you know, the bye here, give Cam Robinson a little bit of time to get better, give Landon Collins plenty of time to just get fully over his injury. Number of players that are banged up, dinged up. Give them a chance, because this stretch run here is just super critical. And I know we've got Western Carolina in there, but three of the four teams that we have left to play, I mean, any of them can beat us. And you know, we've got to be ready to play. And so I'm rooting for a very peaceful bye week, and with a lot of rehab and a lot of recovery and a lot of practice time against some of these mobile quarterbacks. You know, I don't know if you have a thought for the bye week, but, you know, kind of give us your thoughts and then carry us into your thoughts for LSU.
Well, I'm glad that, you know, I'm glad the first team out of the bye week is LSU. I'm glad it's at LSU after they just upset Ole Miss, which I called at the beginning of the game they would, for the listeners. I knew they would beat Ole Miss. I think it's great that we can put our eye on them after what they just did. So I'm glad they're our next opponent. I am frustrated that Mississippi State gets a bye before they play us. I wish they had a gauntlet game right before us like we do.
Right.
But I think LSU's game is, you know, I think the MO is going to be the same that they brought to Ole Miss. They fumbled the ball three times in that first half, and they were down 7-3. So for the listeners that didn't get to watch the game, LSU could have put more points on them. I mean, they fumbled at the 1 yard line after a 90-yard drive in the first quarter. So I really think this could have been, you know, even a different ball game than it turned out. What I take solace there is we've got a bigger defense than Ole Miss. We've got those big linebackers that Ole Miss doesn't have. And so I think we are built for the run. So yeah, I guess I'm excited.
It's like,
I'm sorry?
Better depth at the positions.
Better depth in the front seven. And I think that, you know, they're not going to run that quarterback because they know he's their only option, and they know they've got a stable of running backs that they run out there with two fullbacks. And so I'm hoping that we are able to, that they're going to sit there and try to run the ball 30 times at us, and that we can shut the run down to 2.5 yards a carry and beat them that way.
Yep. I agree. That's kind of what I would expect from them. They've got, you know, they've got the talent and the horses to run that kind of style. You know, they should have definitely put more points on Ole Miss. They, you know, like you said, the fumble. Ole Miss is not used to having to defend that, you know, that kind of style. It also keeps their offense off the field. I think they're going to try to keep it a low scoring game, keep it close. All sort of the cliches. But they're cliches for a reason. I think that's what I think that's how LSU is going to try to fight us. I think that it does bode well for us having the bye week to sort of recover, and then the ability to focus on getting not only the getting healthy, but here's the things that we could have done, should have done, need to improve upon against Tennessee. And we're going to play LSU, always a tough place to play. I'm glad we got to play in Knoxville. Before, which can be a tough place to play as well, before we go to Baton Rouge. Of course, you know, CBS is going to schedule it as their night game, and so we're going to get a kind of maximum effect there. But we can also look at LSU as having knocked off Ole Miss, and so the odds of us playing Ole Miss again are very, very, very low, almost zero. But now we can go beat the team that just beat Ole Miss. That's as close to sort of that type of retribution as we're going to get. And I think that's going to capture the players' attention as well.
Oh, sure. And, you know, we can't minimize the fact in this game against Tennessee, because of their success with the running quarterback, they had 79 plays on offense.
Yeah.
And so the bye also can't come at a better time, because I wouldn't like to be going in there to a night game in Baton Rouge when I heard Les Miles is 45-4 at night on Saturday night after our defense had just had to go against 79 plays on offense.
Agreed. Agreed. 100% agree there. What kind of prediction? I know it's a week out, but as we sit here and kind of look over the horizon, what kind of score would you predict for our LSU contest?
You know, I think this is going to be a close game for three quarters. I think this game's going to frustrate us, because early on, I think they're going to have some success running the ball. You know, it's going to be something that I think they're going to be able to stay in the game by keeping us off the field offensively. You know, I see this as a game where late in the game, those drives we had against Tennessee, we'll have again, and we'll be able to put touchdowns on the board. But I see this as a 34-24 game, and I see me being pissed off because LSU got 24 points.
Okay. Well, I wrote down 24-14. I don't know that they get up to 24. I think they can definitely get 14, you know, maybe 17, and we're looking at 24, 27, kind of in that ballpark. So I think you know, we get that extra touchdown. You know, we probably get a 3-point lead and kind of trade touchdowns a little bit there. I think we get that sort of separating, that exhale relief touchdown, like you said, in the fourth quarter. I'm looking at about a 10-point contest. So are you. Just a little dialing back the over-under just a little bit on the under.
Well, I would definitely prefer yours, because I don't want our defense to give up 24 points.
Exactly. Anything we missed?
I'm sure we had, man, but we'll pick it up next time.
Absolutely. Hey, hit us up on iTunes. We love the reviews. We love the engagement with folks. Hit iTunes, leave us an authentic review, and we'll cover it over the air. We certainly would appreciate that. With that, hey, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast, powered by Bama Hammer. Roll Tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just to shout out a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out, where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll Tide.